Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The election is just 2 weeks away from today, and we are continuing our election coverage with a debate on Proposition 47, officially called the Reduced Penalties for Some Crimes Initiative. Prop 47 would reclassify felonies to misdemeanors for certain non-serious, non-violent crimes, including most drug possession cases. Forgery, shoplifting, writing bad checks, and theft of money or goods worth less than $950 would also be reclassified. Proponents say an estimated 10,000 inmates who were sent to prison on conviction of any of the downgraded crimes would be resentenced. Criminal history and risk assessment would be considered. Proponents also say the initiative is projected to save $150 million to $250 million per year, which would be channeled into a Safe Neighborhoods and Schools Fund to be spent on anti-crime programs, including mental health treatment, dropout prevention, and victim compensation. San Francisco District Attorney George Gascon supports the initiative, saying the money spent on incarcerating nonviolent, low-risk felons would be better spent on programs that address the source of the problem. He told the San Francisco Chronicle that he is championing the proposition because, quote, what we've been doing has not worked, end quote. According to Ballotpedia, donors supporting Prop 47, including the Open Society Policy Center, have contributed over $1 million. Other supporters include the California Democratic Party, the League of Women Voters, the California Teachers Association, the ACLU, and several labor groups. Altogether, the Yes on 47 campaign has raised $4.6 million. And joining us from the Yes on 47 campaign is Lenore Anderson. She's an attorney and executive director of Vote Safe and Californians for Safety and Justice. That's a nonprofit that works to promote alternative criminal justice strategies. And Lenore joins me in studio. Hi, Lenore. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning.
And opponents of 47 say the proposition will not make communities safer because it would create shorter prison sentences for serious crimes like identity theft and stealing firearms. Those are the words of U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein. She is on the No on 47 side, along with the California Republican Party, the California Police Chiefs Association, the California State Sheriffs Association, and several district attorneys from across the state. According to Ballotpedia, the No on 47 campaign has raised just over $297,000. Mark Peterson is district attorney for Contra Costa County, and he opposes Prop 47. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning. So what questions do you have on Proposition 47? If you work in the field of criminal justice, if you have any questions about this or comments on this, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. So, Lenore, you're on the Yes on 47 campaign. First off, talk to us about how this proposition ended up on the ballot.
Sure. And just to give your readers or your listeners a little bit of background about California's problems in its criminal justice system, many of you are probably aware California has dramatically expanded its prison system over the last several decades. We've increased the number of people incarcerated by 5 times, the number of state prisons by 22, and we have dramatically expanded the expenditures. Prison spending has gone up by 1,500% in the last 25 years. This has far outpaced the growth of every other part of California state budget. And unfortunately, all of this growth has failed. We have a recidivism rate for people coming out of state prison at more than 65%, and we've depleted resources that could be available and should be available for smart local public safety strategies. So our organization joined with San Francisco District Attorney George Gascon, as well as recently retired police chief from San Diego, Bill Lansdowne, to craft Proposition 47 and put together a set of solutions that will help the state rebalance our criminal justice spending priorities. The goal of Proposition 47 is to get smart about how we use our criminal justice and public safety dollars to stop wasting prison space on low-level nonviolent crimes and allow for us to save money in prison spending and invest it into crime prevention, rehabilitation, and treatment at the local level.
And this would apply to about 10,000 inmates. They would be eligible for resentencing if 47 passes?
Well, we actually don't know how many people in state prison may be eligible to go before a judge and seek resentencing. It will depend on an individual analysis of each of those cases. We estimate somewhere between 7 and 10,000 people may be eligible, but that will certainly be a process that takes place after the election to figure out how many would be suitable for release. The other impact and the thing that's important to note about what this initiative is doing is we're taking these nonviolent, non-serious crimes and reclassifying them to misdemeanors, and there's two things that occur as a result of that. People will be sanctioned at the local level and face misdemeanor punishments as opposed to the potential for prison placement. And additionally, they won't have a felony conviction for the low-level nonviolent, non-serious crime. And we know, and many of your listeners are probably aware of some of the collateral consequences and lifetime consequences of a felony conviction. So we're really trying to make sure that a felony conviction means something and is commensurate with the crime committed.
And I want to be clear on this because there are a lot of this bill it seems pretty big, right? I mean, I'm looking at Ballotpedia, for example, and it says the initiative would, and there's five large changes it would make. And so I just want to make sure that we're very clear about
Sure.
all of this, because it's easy to sort of say non-serious and non-violent property and drug crimes, but what does that mean exactly?
Sure.
So I'll get you to respond in just a minute, Mark, but Lenore, can you just tell
Sure.
us what is at the top of your list? What would this change that concerns you the most right now?
Well, so what we need to do is focus our law enforcement and public safety resources on violent and serious crime. When we have such overly broad use and ineffective use of our criminal justice resources, it's not a smart way to stop the cycle of crime at the local level. What we know is that the dramatic expansion of prisons over the last several decades has harmed our ability to invest in the kinds of things we need at the local level to stop the cycle of crime. So Proposition 47's goal is to get smart and to focus on violent and serious crime for our law enforcement and public safety resources, and then make the kind of investments at the local level that we know would stop the cycle of crime, specifically mental health and drug treatment. We know that drug substance abuse addiction and mental health problems are major drivers of low-level criminal activity, and we want to invest in the kind of treatment that we need to stop that cycle. But just to give your listeners the specifics of the initiative, there are six crimes that we reclassify from felony to misdemeanor, and they are drug possession and then five petty theft-related crimes, receipt of stolen property under 950, shoplifting under 950, petty theft under 950, forging a check under $950, and writing a bad check under $950. So those are the crimes that would be changed to misdemeanor punishments, and that is where we would get prison savings by seeing a drop, an annual drop in the prison budget.
Okay, so that's the main gist of Prop 47. And Mark Peterson, again, you're a district attorney for Contra Costa County. You oppose Prop 47. Why do you oppose reclassifying those crimes to a misdemeanor?
Well, I think it's helpful for your listeners to understand who's speaking to them, so let me give you a little bit about my background.
Sure.
I've been a deputy district attorney for 30 years. I've been the elected district attorney in Contra Costa County, which is the ninth largest county in the state, the 1.1 million population. The bottom line that this proposition does, and I disagree with the characterization that, and you as the monitor kind of correctly pointed out, this calling these things non-serious, non-violent is a bit of a misnomer. What it does do is it reduces all drug possessions to misdemeanors. So currently it's a felony to possess cocaine, it's a felony to possess heroin, and the DAs can charge it as a felony to possess methamphetamine. What this would do is reduce all those drug crimes to misdemeanors. Well, I personally think those are serious crimes and those are violent crimes. People just possessing the drugs may not be, but people that usually possess cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamine many times are not, working 40 hours a week in downtown San Francisco. They're committing crimes to support their habit, and their crimes are burglarizing the homes of your listeners. Their crimes are robbing your listeners, their crimes. I've done 27 murder cases. I can't tell you how many of those were as a result, frankly, of methamphetamine use. So these are dangerous drugs. These are things that we shouldn't be reducing to misdemeanors at all. For example, my opponent says, well, all of our efforts have failed. Well, that's kind of a nice broad statement. What do you mean all of our efforts have failed regarding prisons? We've locked up some of the right people to lock up. The 65% recidivism rate, it keeps being thrown out there. Well, what do they mean by recidivism? If you have a dirty drug test, you're called recidivate. So that doesn't mean the system failed. Okay, they had a bad drug test. Does that mean we failed in turning this person's behavior around after a prison sentence? Not necessarily. I have the same goal of trying to get people in treatment. I don't want to send people in prison if I don't have to. But we're not wasting hundreds of millions of dollars on low-level drug offenders in prison. I doubt very much that my opponent on this line knows how many people are in state prison for low-level drug offenders. I doubt that most listeners know that. Most listeners have now been convinced by newspaper articles, et cetera, that the prisons are full of low-level drug offenders. It's simply not true. 70% of all the current state prison inmates are there for crimes like murder, rape, robbery, and sexual assault. So 7 out of 10. There are 135,000 inmates currently in state prison. Only 4,300 of them, 3%, are in there for a drug offense. 14% are in there for property crimes like stealing your car, breaking into your home. 26% are in there because they previously committed a violent, sex, or serious felony. So the people that are in prison are the ones that should be in prison.
Let me ask you something, Mark, because you're throwing out some interesting stats here. So 4% of the 135,000 prisoners in California are in there for drugs?
For simple drug possession,
3%. 3%.
But this law, this proposition, which is going to solve this huge alleged problem we have, the problem is the prisons are full of low-level drug offenders, and it sounds very attractive. I know it costs $50,000 to $60,000 to house these people in prison. So a reader goes, oh, yeah, let's get all these low-level drug offenders out of prison. Well, there aren't very many in prison.
So 3% are in for drug offenses. Does that 3% include every drug from marijuana to heroin?
Yes.
Okay. So then out of that 3%, do you know what percentage are in there for marijuana versus heroin?
I don't. It's very, very few. I guarantee that. I've been a DA for 30 years. I can't remember the last time we sent somebody. Nobody goes to prison for simple marijuana possession. They might go to prison for selling marijuana, but those are even very, very small numbers. Now, there are people in prison for selling drugs, but even those numbers are fairly low. But the current inmate population, out of 134,000, there's only 4,300 in there for simple drug possession. And I can assure you, those people weren't just walking down the street one day and they happened to have cocaine on them. They've probably been to prison five or six times before. They probably had a drug treatment problem. They probably have a juvenile record and a felony record. So this alleged problem that they're filled of improperly with low-level drug offenders is just not accurate.
So Mark brought up a lot of points here, Lenore. First off, how many do we have prisoners in the state, in California prisons right now, who are in there for marijuana possession or selling marijuana?
We have some. We don't have very many. Marijuana possession is an infraction in the state of California. So I agree that we don't have many for that particular drug. I don't think the number is zero, but it is certainly not a lot.
And would this reclassify all drug possession, including cocaine, heroin, and meth, to a misdemeanor?
Yes.
Okay.
So, and if I could just offer a couple of thoughts on that. First, we have a drug epidemic in the United States. The buildup of incarceration and prisons across the country in large part has actually been driven by changes in drug policy and, increasing and expanding the use of felony convictions and tough sentences for drug-specific related crimes. And it hasn't worked. We have just as many people addicted to drugs, unable to access the treatment needed to address that problem. So I think what we need to ask ourselves is this effective at stopping the cycle of crime? And the simple answer is it hasn't been effective. So we do need to address drug issues. And that's the reason that our initiative is focused on investing in drug treatment and mental health treatment at the local level. The other thing I want to mention is you know, one in five prisoners in California prisons are in there for nonviolent, non-serious crimes. We are not suggesting that everyone in the state prisons is in there for something serious. In fact, that's why this proposal is a modest proposal. This is a modest set of changes that would go a long way to saving a ton of money. You know, if we're able to reduce the prison population modestly by focusing on these crimes that the public agrees are sufficiently handled through misdemeanor punishments at the local level, so we can focus those resources on violent and serious crime, we would save, you know, anywhere between $100 to $300 million per year, according to the Independent Legislative Analyst Office. So it is a modest proposal to deal with a subsection of the population that the public agrees can be handled through misdemeanor punishments locally, and it would save a huge amount of money to help us get smart locally. We desperately need much more robust treatment and public safety strategies at the local level to stop the cycle of crime.
What about that, Mark?
Well, you can talk about the drug epidemic in the whole country if you want to. Let's just talk about California. The statistics, these are indisputable. California Department of Corrections put these statistics out. Anybody from the public can go online and find this out. 3% of all the people in prison are in there for low-level drug offenses. That's the numbers. I don't know what they are in the whole country, but that's what they are in prison. So this is, frankly, an unnecessary ballot proposition. And those people aren't just their first-time offense. A judge doesn't just get up one day and go, okay, first-time offender, I think I'm going to send him to prison. This person has an attorney that represents them. They don't plead guilty unless their attorney recommends it or decides to. They've got a judge that reviews the appropriate sentence. And this person, whoever they were, these 4,300 out of 134,000, go to prison for drugs. They should be there because we've tried all the efforts. We've tried drug treatment with them. We've tried these other efforts. It isn't like they go in there for the first time, brand new, off the street. And
hold on that point, is that true, Lenore?
Sure, people in prison have prior records. I think the issue has it worked? I mean, I really think, you know, at this point, you know, one of the things that pretty much everybody of all, political spectrums and backgrounds agree on is that, you know, wasting prison space on nonviolent, non-serious crime when the recidivism rate is 65% and when it costs $60,000 per year per inmate is not a good use of money. And so, you know, we know, of course, we need to invest in local strategies that are going to help us stop this cycle. The fact that people keep cycling in and out is exactly the point, is that we just haven't invested in the kind of strategies that make a difference.
Well, and what about that, Mark? Because San Francisco District Attorney George Gascon supports Proposition 47, saying that the money spent on incarcerating nonviolent low-risk felons, you can talk about, I guess, the 3% low-level drug offenders, would be better spent on the programs that address the source of the problem.
Well, that's one DA. There's 58 DAs, 55. But, 58 elected. Let me respond.
Sure, but what do you think about his comment?
Pardon?
How would you respond to George Gascon's comment?
I am. So 55 of 58 DAs don't support this. United States Senator Dianne Feinstein doesn't support this. All the police chiefs don't support it, the organization, the state sheriffs, the California District Attorney's Association. I agree that it's very expensive to house these people in prison. That's why we're not housing very many of them in state prison. And they've been given treatment. These are the people that are in state prison currently that get sent to state prison that are not rehabilitatable. They don't want to rehabilitate. They've been given chance after chance after chance. And these are serious crimes. They want to reduce the crimes of identity theft and any crime under 950. Let's talk about that for a minute. You ask somebody if your $950 bike is stolen today. Do you think that's a serious crime? If all your credit cards are stolen today, do you think that's a pretty serious crime? If your iPhone's stolen today, don't you think that's a pretty serious crime? Yeah, but under this initiative, people want to characterize it as non-serious crimes. Those are serious crimes. The legislative office, their own words are, the fiscal effects of this measure are subject to significant uncertainty. These are some bold projections. This is going to save hundreds of millions of dollars, and we've all been sold out bill of goods before. I don't think that's accurate. The legislative analyst's office themselves say this is really uncertain exactly how much it's going to save. And finally, we want local control. That's why we have DAs that have the discretion to charge these as felonies or misdemeanors, and that discretion goes up and down the state. And then the judges have the discretion whether to send somebody to prison or not. You're taking that discretion away. You're painting everybody with the same brush. It's not offender-based, it's offense-based. And there's some people that deserve penalties. Many, many, many deserve misdemeanors. Let's let the judge decide.
Lenore, does this apply to identity theft? Because this is the one thing that Senator Feinstein has been saying, that Prop 47 would reclassify a wide range of crimes. We'll talk about more after the break, but she includes identity theft in that list.
Identity theft is a separate penal code section in California's penal code, and it's a felony, as it should be.
That's identity theft, but stealing somebody's credit cards, which leads to identity theft, would be reduced to misdemeanor. So if your wallet gets stolen today with every single one of your credit cards in there, the person that's convicted of stealing those credit cards that maybe gives them to somebody else, that person's only going to get a misdemeanor.
They can get charged with identity theft.
But if they're not, if they're not the person that actually uses it, if they're the one that steals it, gives it to somebody else to use it, we can't prove that they were the ones that actually committed the, quote, identity theft. They just stole the cards. That's a misdemeanor under this new legislation.
Well, you know, a couple of broader comments. First, California's penal code provides many opportunities to charge cases in different ways, and we very narrowly tailored this to allow for more serious crimes to be charged appropriately as the identity theft crime that they are, or as burglary, or as anything else that is felony-level crime, as it should be. We narrowly tailored this. We think that there's plenty of opportunities for prosecutors to proceed appropriately in cases where they need to. It's backed not just by the way, I'm a former prosecutor. I was in the San Francisco District Attorney's Office, and not only was this is this supported by San Francisco District Attorney D.A. Gascon, it's also supported by Santa Clara District Attorney Jeff Rosen, Humboldt District Attorney Gallegos. This was crafted by, D.A. Gascon, Bill Lansdowne, our team. You know, we had this was crafted and put together by law enforcement leaders who are very familiar with how to narrowly tailor things such that we can proceed appropriately in cases where we need to proceed appropriately. And I think, you know, importantly, we have to ask ourselves what should we be doing in cases to make sure that we stop the cycle of crime. Misdemeanor punishments can result in jail time. That is an option for sanctioning people who are convicted of misdemeanors at the local level. The distinction here is really we're talking about a prison bed and a felony conviction. Those are really the areas of distinction that we're talking about. And, you can proceed on all of these cases, and people can go to jail for these cases.
Well, let's take a call. Just a minute, Mark. Let's take a call right before we go to break. People have been waiting patiently. Let's hear from Lisa in Berkeley. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Hi. When I was in law school, I did criminal defense. I have to say, most of the people we represented were poor, the people who were going to prison. And I think I'm very concerned about the way you're talking about these people, as if they're not our brothers and sisters, our family members. They're not part of our community, as if they are some kind of deranged people, and as if putting people in prisons is humane. I mean, I think when we do that, we lose our own humanity. And I think we need to stop looking at these people as something other than who we are. Mm-hmm. They are part of our life. They're part of our community. They're going to come out. And putting them in prison is only going to teach them to be more inhumane. Treating people inhumanely only leads to more inhumaneness.
Well, thank you for calling, Lisa. We'll get a comment after the break. Actually, on Thursday's show, we are going to speak with prisoners who are now out of prison. There's a re-entry photo exhibit in Alameda County, so be sure to tune in for that. Today, we are having a debate on Prop 47, which would reclassify felonies to misdemeanors for nonviolent crimes. What questions do you have about Proposition 47? This is your call. We'll be back after this.
This is your call on Local Public Radio, KALW. If you'd like to add a perspective that you haven't heard yet in today's discussion or need to ask a question you feel should be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free call no matter where you are. You can also send an email question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. The BBC's World Have Your Say coming up at 11 o'clock. On the program today, we'll hear about Nigerians taking to social media to call for recognition for Dr. Stella Ameyo Adedevo, She's the doctor whose swift action in quarantining the man who brought the Ebola virus to Nigeria is credited with saving the country from the epidemic. Her story and more on World Have Your Say from the BBC, coming up at 11.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation, pre-taped conversation, with Laura Poitras. When Edward Snowden first contacted Laura Poitras 2 years ago, she was in the process of making a film about surveillance. She thought she was in dialogue with an anonymous source, but soon learned that he wanted to reveal his identity. And Laura's new film, Citizen 4, is opening nationwide on Friday. So we'll have a conversation with Laura about her experience over the past 2 years with Edward Snowden. And then on Thursday, like I just mentioned, we'll have former prisoners on the show who are out of prison. They'll talk about what it's like to re-enter society. There is a photo exhibit in Alameda that focuses on re-entry. And you can send us an email if you have a show idea or a guest idea to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are continuing our election coverage. The election is in 2 weeks. It's Tuesday the 4th. There have been some envelopes sent to voters saying that Election Day is on November 5th. That is not correct. Election Day is Tuesday, November 4th, 2 weeks from today. And we will be voting on Proposition 47 in California, the Reduced Penalties for Some Crimes Initiative. It would reclassify felonies to misdemeanors for certain nonviolent crimes, including most drug possession cases. And joining us from the Yes on 47 side is Lenore Anderson, an attorney and executive director of Vote Safe and Californians for Safety and Justice. Other supporters include the California Democrat Party, the League of Women Voters of California, the California Teachers Association, the ACLU, and several labor groups. The Yes on 47 campaign has raised $4.6 million, according to Ballotpedia. The No on 47 campaign has raised $297,000. Opponents include U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein, the California Republican Party, the California Police Chiefs Association, and the California State Sheriff's Association. And we're joined by Mark Peterson, District Attorney for Contra Costa County. He opposes Prop 47. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions or comments on Prop 47, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Mark, would you like to address Lisa's comment? She's worked with people who have been in and out of prison. A lot of these people are poor, and she says they are going to be re-entering our society, and she was offended that she felt like the conversation was talking about them like they're the other, and yet they have families, there are neighbors, there are brothers, there are sisters.
Well, first of all, you know, I said earlier that this an issue is carefully crafted, and I respectfully disagree. Three DAs out of 58 support this. So three out of 58 of the elected DAs think this is a good idea. It also characterizes the possession of a date rape drug, reduces it from a felony to a misdemeanor. That's not careful crafting. I happen to be the father of three young women. I find it appalling that we reduce possession of a date rape drug from a felony to a misdemeanor, which this initiative does. It also reduces theft of a firearm from a felony to a misdemeanor. We got shootings all over in Richmond. We got shootings throughout the country. And these crafters of this initiative think it's a good idea to reduce the crime of stealing a gun to a misdemeanor. Now, talking about these people, what I'm referring to is I somewhat philosophically disagree with the previous caller, because part of life is there's punishment. Even as we raise our children, we have a carrot and a stick. We reward good behavior, we punish bad behavior. If you accept her logic, I guess we would perhaps never punish these individuals. The most of the individuals, 70% of the individuals in prison are there for crimes against other people, murder, rape, robbery, kidnapping. So they aren't, the prisons are not full of low-level drug offenders. Yes, most of these individuals, even those individuals, are coming out of prison. We just passed realignment 3 years ago, the biggest change in law enforcement in the state of California in 30 years. So these individuals come out. Our county, for example, gets $21 million to address this housing issue currently and when they get out. We're spending $4 million on community-based organizations to help these people reenter society. So the DAs aren't these hardcore right-wing Neanderthals that don't want to work on probation. We want to work on probation. We want to work on treatment. And we are. We're spending millions of dollars towards that. But this, we don't believe, is a good way to handle it. It's too draconian, and it takes away local discretion from judges and DAs, and we need to see how realignment plays out before we make these other major changes, in our opinion.
Lenore,
treatment. We believe in treatment. We offer treatment. Somebody gets a first-time offender, they're given treatment. They don't get a felony. They get drug treatment. So it's being offered now. We don't need to reduce these things to misdemeanors because sometimes the only way to motivate somebody to go to treatment is the prospect of a felony.
Lenore, do you want to address Lisa's comment?
Sure. So I appreciate the caller's sentiment and greatly, I very much agree that there's a lot of ways that we talk about the issues related to public safety and criminal justice and people in the criminal justice system in a way that's just unhelpful and inaccurate. And I think, you know, just to give one example, of who we're talking about when we talk about who is impacted by low-level nonviolent crime convictions, someone who I have a great amount of admiration and respect for is a woman by the name of Susan Burton. Some of your listeners may be familiar with Susan. She's very well known as a leader in reentry. And Susan Burton is out of Los Angeles. She runs a program called the New Way of Life Reentry Program for women coming out of state prison. And she launched that program based on her own experience. She had a terrible tragedy. Her 5-year-old son was killed, and she spiraled into drug addiction and was in and out of state prison with felony convictions for drug possession numerous times. And it wasn't until she was finally able to access treatment and help that she got on a path to recovery and trauma recovery clean living. And she now runs a series of programs for women facing similar circumstances and has received numerous awards for the work that she's doing. And I mentioned Susan's story because the cycle in and out of prison did not help put her on a path to recovery. And like so many people who are in that cycle, there are oftentimes underlying unaddressed issues that are driving that cycle. And if we can just be much more smart about what is going on, what are the underlying drivers, how are we going to stop the cycle of crime, what we're going to do is we're going to invest our resources differently, and it's going to reduce crime and reduce prison spending at the same time. And if I could just mention, you know, I'm very glad that the district attorney from Contra Costa supports treatment. We agree on that. And I just want to mention that, you know, when you talk about whether or not it's available in California, it's important to know that 48 out of California's 58 counties have no residential drug treatment programs. 48 out of 58 counties have no residential drug treatment programs. In addition to that, when you talk about mental health treatment, which I'm sure your listeners would agree, we mental health issues are oftentimes very linked to problems being involved in the criminal justice system and committing crimes, 4 out of 10 mental health treatment beds have been closed in California in the last 5 years. Mm. 4 out of 10. So there's a real imbalance here. And I think what we need to do is we need to say, look, we all agree our law enforcement resources should focus on violent and serious crime. Let's stop acting like we have the resources to address the drivers at the local level, because we just don't.
Why is that? 48 out of 58 counties have no residential drug treatment program. Has that been the case in the last couple decades, or is this new?
There has been a profound lack of funding available for sustaining drug treatment programs across the state. The original Proposition 36 from the year 2000 that expanded drug treatment in California, there has not been any funding for that since, I think, 2006. Around that time. We have a situation where we have a problem at the community level for which there is not commensurate treatment to address it.
And if Prop 47 passes, would the money be used to try to start more drug treatment programs in these 48 counties?
So the initiative requires that there be an annual calculation of the prison savings associated with this initiative, and that the state prison savings associated with it is transferred into a fund, and then counties, local public agencies of any kind, not just counties, but cities as well, can apply for those funds. And the funds go to mental health treatment, drug treatment, trauma recovery service for victims, and programs for at-risk youth in public schools.
So we're going to get to calls in a minute, but just briefly, Mark, Lenore is saying that we don't have these treatment programs if 48 out of 58 counties in California don't have residential drug treatment programs.
Well, those are residential treatment programs, and there are other treatment programs that aren't residential. I mean, residential is you live there, you stay there, you're almost locked out. Well, that isn't necessarily even the most effective treatment program. Treatment program could be counseling, could be seeing people, it could be going to AA meetings, and you're still in your home where you get the support of your family. So that doesn't mean that the sky is falling. The fact that 48, and I don't know that that's true, but I'm trusting that it's true or accurate. I don't think that necessarily means the sky is falling, because the other thing is we're treating these law enforcement, probation, parole have been trying to treat these people for years and years and years and decades. It isn't like we just throw these individuals in jail or prison and forget about them. For example, Contra Costa County, 85% of all of our felony sentences are what are called split sentences, which means they get some time in custody, then we require that they're monitored after they get out of custody, and they have to take some sort of treatment program to address either mental health issues or drug issues. So it's being done right now. It isn't like this is something new that somebody's thought of and we're draconian and haven't been doing this. We do this. $21 million of the money that we can choose to spend that comes to us from the state for CCP money goes to community-based organizations, $4 million of the $21 million. So we spend, Contra Costa, $4 million to, whether it's treatment programs or housing or mental health issues. So a lot of money's already being thrown at these issues. So but we have to remember, there are criminologists out there that study these issues, and they also talk about that there needs to be a punishment side.
Mark, I have to jump in because I just realized we've got just about 18 minutes left here, and I've got a bunch of phone calls.
Okay.
Mark Peterson is district attorney for Contra Costa County. He opposes Proposition 47, which would reclassify felonies to misdemeanors for nonviolent crimes, including most drug possession, forgery, shoplifting, writing bad checks, and theft of money or goods worth less than $950 would also be reclassified. On the yes side, we're joined by Lenore Anderson. She's an attorney and executive director of Vote Safe and Californians for Safety and Justice. We've got full lines. Why don't we go through a few, and thanks for your patience, and then we'll get comments. Let's hear from Ed in Berkeley. Hi, Ed.
Hi, good morning. I'd like to say some facts about the issue. And by the way, the strongest drug I ever taken in my whole life is hot tea. I never have taken any illicit drugs ever in my whole life. Never cared about it. Never even smoked. But the fact is, the United States population is less than 5% of the world population. However, we use 60% of the illicit drugs worldwide, believe it or not, 60%, even though our population is only 5%. The second fact is 51% of people in the jails, in prisons in the United States, 51% are in for drug-related offenses, you know, all of drug-related offenses. The fact is, drug addiction is an illness and should be treated as an illness. Mm-hmm. We have to push for decriminalization and face ourselves with the violent criminals, serial killers, people who do crime because they're violent. All drug offenses should be treated as illness, and people should be treated. It breaks families, you know. So what do you get out if the father or the mother go to jail because she smoked some kind of drugs or whatever? We need to criminalize all drug offenses, especially, of course, use, not selling. No, I'm not talking about selling, just use. Decriminalize it totally.
All right.
And we will have totally different society.
Thank you so much for calling, Ed. I'll get a comment in just a few minutes. Let's go for next to Eric in San Francisco. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I guess what I was interested in your guest addressing would be the whole issue of, so very few of these cases go to real trial with a jury or whatever. The fact that if they're a felony, they get pled down to a misdemeanor anyway. Would your guest care to address how that is now and how this would change in the future?
All right. Thank you, Eric. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. Let's hear from Greg in San Carlos. Hi, Greg.
Hi. How you doing this morning, sir? I'll just succinct as I can for time. Here's the question to you. I don't have the statistics in front of me, but let's say we have 50,000 people in prison who shouldn't be there. Do you want to help out or not, no matter what it costs you out of your pension, out of the county coffers, et cetera? Yes or no?
Okay, thank you for that. Let's go next to Tom in San Francisco. Hi, Tom.
If the United States has 5% of the population in the world and 25% of the people in prison, does that mean we have five times as much crime? And what is the DA's alternative? Build more prisons? Give raises to DAs? What is his alternative?
All right. Thank you, Tom. Now we have some lines free, so if you'd like to call us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. We're debating Proposition 47 today. So why don't you take Tom's question first, Mark. What is your alternative? Do you think we should build more prisons?
Well, I can take them all real quickly. First of all, the first caller illustrated the fact that so many people don't know the facts. And that I remember a show called Dragnet, and the star would say, just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. The facts are, I keep saying this, but nobody seems to want to acknowledge it or address it. Oh, there's only 3% of all the people in prison are in there for drug possession. But we've all been sold a bill of goods or believed the, I don't know if it's the media or just some report, but there aren't very many people in prison for low-level drug offenders. So let's all accept that, hopefully, and check the facts. You don't have to trust me. Go on the website and see.
All right, Lenore, is that true?
So, that one in five people in California's prisons are in there for nonviolent, non-serious crimes generally.
Okay.
There's somewhere between 7,000 and 10,000 people that are in there for the crimes that Proposition 47 addresses, about half of which would be drug possession. So I think that that would be somewhere between, you know, 2,500 to 5,000 people, which is probably consistent with the numbers that the DA's throwing out. But I think, you know, what I heard the caller say as the broader point was, what have we been doing if we still have a drug epidemic? It clearly hasn't been working to focus on the punishment approach only. And I think, you know, that's a really important point that the caller raises because, you know, what I've seen, was the director of public safety for the city of Oakland. I was the director of the mayor's office of criminal justice for the city of San Francisco. I've worked very closely with law enforcement in both jurisdictions. And what I have, you know, come to conclude, and I think many in the field of criminal justice would agree, it's actually not fair to expect law enforcement, prosecutors, and, you know, the criminal justice system to solve problems that it's fundamentally ill-equipped to solve. As we have reduced and divested from mental health, drug treatment, social services, programs at the local level to have health responses to health problems, we've put the burden on the criminal justice system to address those issues, and it's frankly just not working.
Hmm. Well, since you jumped to the first question, Mark, what about Ede's comment that this should be treated as an illness? We're also getting some emails from listeners who say poverty plays a huge role here. How do you think that should be addressed, and do you agree?
Well, it depends on how you define illness. These individuals, their illness, their challenge, their issues being addressed now. They are offered drug treatment. Somebody charged with cocaine comes in, and they can plead, they can take a drug treatment program and have their charge dismissed. So it isn't like they're forced to go to prison. They have an attorney that represents them. They can fight the charge if they're not guilty. The only way they go to prison, and the previous caller is correct, probably 95% of these individuals in prison agreed to go to prison because they were guilty and didn't want to do treatment, or they had a prior record where the judge felt it was going to be appropriate. So we're not, you know, these issues regarding treatment, we've been trying to do that for some time. When I became DA, I even changed my mission statement. I said the mission of our office is trying to prevent crime. The DAs throughout the state of California are doing as much as we can to try and keep people out of prison. We know it costs $60,000 a year to house them. We try and involve ourselves in programs that will keep them out of prison, and low-level drug offenders aren't very much of that population, but we do need the ability to charge them with a felony sometimes to force them to go to a treatment program. And if they won't go to the treatment program, then a felony is appropriate, then they could go to state prison. And some of these guys can get treatment in custody. Sometimes their dry out period in custody, whether it's jail or prison, can help them beat their addiction.
What about Tom's question for you specifically, Mark? What alternatives do you have to this growing problem of, you know, the high number of prisoners we have and the high number of prisons we have in California?
Well, we've already done the realignment. This is the biggest change in 30 years. We now have, I've been doing this for 30 years, we now, our sentencing structure is such that the punishment that people receive as far as prison is less than it's been in 30 years. The length of their prison terms, most people don't go to prison anymore as far as what they're being charged with, because the only people that go to prison are those that are charged with a violent felony, a sex felony, or a serious felony. If you're a drug dealer and that's all you commit, you sell kilos of drugs, you don't go to prison, you go to jail. So we've already come up with a gentler, softer approach, and I'd like to see how that works out. Is our crime rate going to go way up? Right now it hasn't. I can't say the sky's falling with realignment. It has fundamentally changed. The crime rates haven't risen dramatically, so maybe it's all going to, you know, be a good thing. But we're sending less people to prison than we have.
Lenore?
I think, realignment was a significant shift, and we did see a drop in the prison population. However, that drop has started to go back up, right? So the prison population in California is going up. The jail populations are also going up. And so, you know, as much as we have tried to make some changes to a system that everybody agrees is broken, we just haven't gotten there. And so the missing piece has really been some shifts to our sentencing laws that right-size the punishments and align our priorities such that we can focus on violent and serious crime and just get smart about reducing the cycle of crime at the local level. So we have made changes, but they have not worked yet. In fact, we're still under federal receivership because the prison population is not to federal court level standards. I mean, this is an ongoing problem that is costing the state a tremendous amount of resources and money.
Lenore Anderson is with the Yes on 47 campaign. She's an attorney and executive director of Vote Safe and Californians for Safety and Justice. Mark Peterson is with the No on 47 campaign. He's district attorney for Contra Costa County. We've got time for a few more calls. If you'd like to join us, we have one line open, 866-798-8255. Let's go to Anonymous in Berkeley. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi. I wanted to say that my daughter was a heroin addict for many years, and she cycled in and out of the jail system. She eventually was murdered. Mm. And I did not find that the cycling through the jails did anything to help with her severe drug problem. And I'm sure the district attorney believes that there are a lot of places for people to go. But if you develop a severe problem with Vicodin, heroin, with many prescription drugs, actually, you don't have a detox center to go to here in Alameda County. So I don't see that this is working. I think we really have to look at the other end, which is getting money to help someone who has a problem, and not just putting them in jail. They get in jail, they detox, they come back out. They haven't gotten real coping skills.
Well,
so that's my comment.
Thank you so much for calling in, and thank you so much for sharing your story, Lenore.
My deepest condolences to you for your loss. I'm also a mom. I have four girls. Ages range from 4 to 19, and I just can't imagine the pain that you've had to endure. So thank you very, very much for calling and sharing your story. And I think it is an example of exactly what we're talking about here when we talk about, are we doing things that make sense? Are we investing in public safety strategies that address the drivers of crime and help people rather than make matters worse?
I'll ask you to give your final thoughts in just a minute, but we have an email from Bill who says, do you believe that giving local control to local DAs and judges? Actually, I'm sorry, Mark, can you respond to our anonymous caller from Berkeley?
Sure,
about her daughter?
Absolutely. I think we all agree that treatment is what we want to get individuals who have a drug addiction program, and we disagree about how to go about it. The proponents of this initiative think, well, let's reduce these crimes to misdemeanor. Let's just kind of throw up our hands and go, okay, it's not working, so the solution is reduce these to misdemeanors. We don't believe that's the right approach. We still believe in treatment, and one of the reasons you can get people in treatment is if you have that felony, that's a possibility that can motivate them to get treatment. Additionally, it allows the judge, again, the judges decide the ultimate sentence, and a judge is better suited to decide, should this person get a felony or should they get a misdemeanor? And with the judge, as well as the DAs have that discretion, that's better use of resources than letting the state just decide everything.
What about, and I know this is one specific case, Mark, but what about this mother who says that her daughter didn't have access to the treatment?
Well, I'm sure that can be a problem, but there's more access or more programs out there that I'm aware of than ever before with realignment. With realignment, so much money has been shifted to all the counties. The counties all get millions of dollars that they can decide to spend the way they want to spend it. And to my knowledge, most of the counties are spending the vast majority on treatment and supervision and those kind of things. They're not spending it on, you know, lock them up longer because we can't lock them up longer even if we wanted to. We can't send them to prison anymore. Low-level drug offenders aren't even eligible to go to prison.
And Mark, is there anything in Prop 47 you agree with, just briefly?
You know what? If they had made it a wobbler, if they'd said, listen, methamphetamine, for example, is a wobbler, which means I can charge it as a felony or misdemeanor. That's been the law for a long time. And methamphetamine, frankly, is much more of a dangerous drug as far as violence than probably heroin and cocaine. If they'd made it a wobbler, I wouldn't have probably had any problem with it. If they left out the fact that they made a date rape drug a misdemeanor, I could live with it.
Lenore, what about that
point? Firearm. I can't live with stealing a firearm.
Just quickly, the date rape drug. Just quickly,
Using any substance of any kind to facilitate sexual assault is a felony. That is maintained under Proposition 47. It is a felony, as it should be, to use any substance, including, by the way, alcohol. It's a felony to even use alcohol to facilitate sexual assault. Using anything to facilitate sexual assault is absolutely a felony, and that's maintained. The most common substance used to facilitate sexual assault is alcohol, and it's a huge issue. One of the things that our initiative does is we put some of the savings into trauma recovery services, and the model of trauma recovery services actually improves victim capacity to go through the criminal justice system and prosecute those cases. So it's one of the things we're doing to help.
Lenore Anderson is with the Yes on 47 campaign. She's executive director of Vote Safe and Californians for Safety and Justice. Mark Peterson is with the No on 47 campaign. He's a district attorney for Contra Costa County. Find out more about Proposition 47 at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. How has Edward Snowden's revelations changed the pervasive mass data collection and our knowledge of it in the United States? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with award-winning filmmaker Laura Poitras about her new documentary, Citizen 4. The film chronicles Snowden's days in Hong Kong, why he decided to make public the government's mass surveillance program, and the fallouts of his decision. What do we still need to know about why Edward Snowden risked his life to expose this surveillance program? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Becca Hoekstra produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is the executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.